Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back with part two of our discussion of the defense in that game against the Bengals on Sunday. Thankfully, a win. We talked a little bit in part one about how much a different conversation this would be if the Ravens had lost that football game. But the overwhelming tide of happiness that surrounds this city right now, or should, with regard to our football team, basically puts us in a good position even to discuss the defense from this game as a learning experience. Joining me anyway to do that is Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how you doing?
Hey, great, Ken. Love talking Ravens and love talking Ravens wins. So happy to be here.
Our kind of day. We talked about a lot of things in the first episode, but one of the things we talked about was how I know sports fans have a worrywartish capacity, and I certainly have that in spades, but I'm not distinguishing myself in any way, but how could, you know, if you can't be happy about the Ravens right now, when can you be happy?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a great time. Like, we absolutely have a true Super Bowl contender that's as good as any team in the NFL right now. And enjoy it. Enjoy these fun games. I think we're going to have plenty of games like we had against the Bills, and we might have a few nail biters like we just had just now, but this is a team that's going to win a lot of games. So just enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I am. And I'm just, it's difficult to be. We talked about a lot of other stuff, a lot about the Ravens pass rush. The pass rush, you know, my conclusion is anyway, and Brandon, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that they pretty much delivered on the pressure requirements of Burrow. And it was more Burrow's ability to withstand that pressure, throw very well in it, to get the ball out quickly, very effectively, to have his receivers play well. And probably it's really more the back end letting the Ravens down than the pass rush letting the Ravens down in this one.
Right, exactly. Like, I think Madubuike, we were saying, had probably his best game of the season. Travis Jones is doing a great job taking on double teams and collapsing the pocket and making it tough. Just sometimes you have to figure out how to not have another team's best players beat you. Like Ja'Marr Chase going for almost 200, like things like that. You have to kind of figure out what to do there.
Yeah, you know, they've been pretty effective in containing Chase in recent times. And even one of the things that I think is fair to say is that the Bengals really haven't had a healthy set of receivers against the Ravens in too many of the recent games, or maybe if I even expand that, a healthy set of Burrow plus the receivers. So the last five games they played over 22 and 23, Burrow's averaged only 5.0 yards per throw. And then, of course, you get to this game, and that's net. And he's well over 8, almost 9 yards per throw, I think, in this game. And it's really a whole different set of circumstances. But this was, you know, more or less, there are some fairly ideal circumstances here. The defense was probably not as good as it was under McDonald. All the receivers are healthy. You know, Burrow is completely healthy. Day game, perfect weather, et cetera, really added up to a tough day for the Ravens defense, pass defense in particular.
Right, exactly. And then, Burrow being extremely accurate, being extremely efficient, especially on third downs. When you can't get off the field and get those third down stops here and there, that really puts a tax on your defense.
We asked you to look around the AFC North and take a look at which situation you'd rather have. And in fact, look around the whole AFC if you want. But the AFC North is particularly dysfunctional outside of the castle. Particularly dysfunctional. I mean, you look around, every team has very significant flaws. The Ravens were worrying about, oh my, do we have the, you know, do we have the right safeties? We talked about that a little bit in the first episode. They've got players who are there. They've got players who might turn it around this year, but they've got, frankly, some players who aren't playing very well right now. And then they've, you know, other teams, though, they have quarterbacks who aren't playing well, or quarterbacks and coaches who are fighting, or, you know, basically coaches for whom there's a groundswell to get rid of them. And I'm not talking about this background noise of Harbaugh. All that's in the first episode. We don't need to talk about it again, but please go back and listen to that episode. Brandon makes some great points about a whole lot of things, and also explains how defensive substitution can be coached effectively, sometimes to cause delay of game penalties. Right. Worth going back and listening to that. So, but we'll go on. We'll talk about some individual players in this part. And Brandon, who would you like to talk about first?
I want to talk about Trent Simpson. I think he's playing fewer snaps, I think, than probably what I expected at the beginning of the season. I thought with Zach Orr's background being kind of that they would kind of be a committed nickel team, have two linebackers on the field majority of the time, kind of like they did last year with Smith and Queen. They have not. Trent Simpson's been kind of in on a lot of rundowns, not as much on pass downs, because like you were saying, they are playing a lot of dime, especially when they're building leads, they're playing a lot of dime. So he's not on the field as much, but he makes an impact when he is playing. I think every game he's made impacts, and this was another game. I don't know. I didn't see snap counts, so I don't know how many snaps he played, but he's very solid against the run. He had a tackle for loss. He broke up a pass. And yeah, you always notice when he's around. You see that speed. You see him flying around. And he's just a really nice player.
45 snaps for Simpson in this one, 67% of the time he was out there. So, you know, there was time. And he's making an impact as a pass rusher too, taking down the quarterback. He had a nice follow-up quarterback hit off. I forget who got the initial pressure when he had it. He didn't get the initial pressure. I think he had a PD in this game, although I may be thinking about another game. He had contributions to run tackles. Yeah.
He was covering a tight end, one of the tight ends on that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things, and PFF grades very hard on missed tackles, and often will take down a linebacker easily there, but he's made 19 consecutive tackles since his only miss in week one. That is a really good run. And I will tell you this right now, Patrick Queen had only one run that was anywhere near as good in his entire career with the Ravens. So of like 19 tackles in a row, which is actually kind of funny to talk about. I think Queen might've had like 24 out of 25 or something at one point, but this is a really good run for Simpson. And I don't know how you feel about Schadenfreude in general. If you're against it, in terms of sports, I think it's an integral part of being a fan and whatnot. Patrick Queen is really taking a beating from Pittsburgh fans right now.
Sure, I like Patrick Queen. I think, you know, I give him credit for improving every year while he was with us, but I do think having Roquan covered up a lot of his deficiencies, and not having that great player inside, and you know, is making him struggle and kind of regress a little bit. You know, I can't say that I'm sorry. You know, my second favorite play, my second favorite team is always whoever plays the Steelers. So I hope that, I hope he continues on, you know, his struggles as long as the Steelers keep losing. Yeah.
20% missed tackle rate for Patrick Queen this year. He's missed 8 tackles already in 5 games. So he missed one on a big important Deshaun Elliott first down in that Sunday night game. Sunday night game, right? Yeah. So that in and of itself was worth the price of admission. And if you didn't watch that game, fantastic, terrible, terrible football, but fantastic, exciting football game.
I have to admit, I fell asleep in the second half, but I was very excited to, you know, learn of the result. But yes, it was an ugly game. I mean, the Steelers have a good defense, but boy, their offense is struggling. And I mean, Fields is, you know, I think they've gotten the most out of Fields, and I don't know if he's going to get any better. And if they end up replacing him with Russell Wilson, I don't think that's going to help much either. So, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it to. I mean, he might be a better game manager as things will work out, but yeah, I would agree. Well, let me move on and talk about somebody else. I think let's get Justin Matabike out there at the top of the show, where frankly he deserves to be, because he had, I don't know if it was the game of his career, but it definitely was an absolutely outstanding game where he was great against the run and the pass. There wasn't anybody on that Bengals line who could block him one-on-one. And they had Volson tried and Kappa tried. They're the guards, and their center is Karras. He tried as well. None of them could handle him one-on-one. And the Ravens are all about getting him one-on-one opportunities. He even rushed from the outside a couple times in this game, but he basically was unstoppable. I thought my favorite play, and he had it all kinds of, by the way, if you want a complete listing of Matabike's highlight plays, go to my article this week, because he's one of the star quality players, and there's like 13 highlights out there for him. But he was blocked on a run play, shed his initial guy, I think was Volson, and then he also shed the left tackle Brown, who was pulling on the play. That's Orlando Brown, folks. And then made the tackle. So just an incredibly impressive game. He had 8 pressures in this game, more than anybody else on the Ravens. Nobody else, in fact, on the Ravens had more than 2 in the game. So Matabike was the Ravens' pass rush. And in a lot of ways, I think we're seeing, from my perspective, maybe 115% of the player the Ravens could have reasonably hoped, despite the fact the sack total has been a lot lower.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, and you alluded to it also earlier, him and Travis Jones have really become a heck of a tandem together. And Travis Jones being able to take on double teams and still cause penetration is giving Matabike just a ton of one-on-one opportunities. And there are very few guards that are consistently going to block him one-on-one. He's quick, and he's also powerful, and they're really good tandem together, working on the inside. And yes, I think this was absolutely his best game of the year. He was just a terror on both sides, you know, rush and pass.
Those two guys drafted number 71. I believe Jones was drafted number 76. What incredible bargains in the third round. I mean, they're right up there, not with Marshall Yanda, maybe, but with Lardarius Webb in terms of, you know, some of the best values the team ever got in round 3. And either one of them, I mean, Matabike might end up being a Yanda-esque Ring of Honor type player for the Ravens the way he's going right now. I have a lot of faith in the Ravens to find good defensive linemen at that point. They had some problems with it too. They drafted, you know, Kaufusi, right? He didn't work out.
Kaufusi. Yeah. Yeah. Timmy Jernigan was up and down, and then kind of was more down.
I like Jernigan a little bit, and they at least got something for him when they got rid of him. They got a third round pick back. It's essentially equal to a bottom of the third round pick. And then they took him in the second round, didn't they? They took Jernigan in the second round, I think.
Yeah, he was a second round. Yeah. But yeah, like, and the Ravens have always kind of, and they struggled in the last couple of years. They've always, like, especially late round to undrafted defensive linemen, they are usually very good at finding those. And they haven't had one of those in a few years now. But if you want to think, I mean, they have a long list, and Michael Pierce, who's still with us, is, you know, one of those undrafted guys that has really been a player. And Project Washington, he was down last year, but I think he's, fifth round pick. He was, he's put in, you know, I think he's come back and been a solid player this year. So,
yeah, he has looked better. There's no doubt about that. Been happy with that, and it's important that he do that. Honestly, he's maybe not quite at the crossroads until next year, but next year will be a crossroads year for Broderick in terms of making sure he maintains his value.
Sure. Absolutely. Let's talk Kyle Hamilton. It's becoming boring that Kyle Hamilton has a pass defense, tackle for loss, a sack, and he's just, you know, making hits and plays all over the field. It's he started slow, but he's really rounding into form, and it's being the impact player that he was last year. And he's that queen on the chessboard that, you know, just I think when he is close to the line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage, I think that's what keeps defensive coordinators up at night, because he can do so much. He can blitz. He's great against the run. He can drop back and his length in the middle of the field when he plays dime back. I mean, try throwing over a 6'4" safety with long arms, you know, to a tight end or a wide receiver on a crossing route. That's a very pinpoint accurate throw that you have to make to get it past him.
Yeah. Either more difficult up and down throw or even to the side. He's got that good length that can close a window just a hair quicker. Incredibly valuable player. I think that the fact that they've moved him around is actually probably helping add value. And there's one play in this game that I just really loved. It's the very first play from scrimmage that the Bengals ran. And the reason I love it is because the very first play from scrimmage that the Browns ran in Baltimore last year was a play where Hamilton came from 3 yards off the line of scrimmage, blitzed not at the quarterback, but to a point between the quarterback and a receiver that he was expecting to be targeted on the left side. And the Ravens put the bait out there. They had probably off coverage on that player on the left, trying to get interception on the play. Hamilton streaks in, and very clear from that moment, Joe Burrow had really done his film study. Because they just called it a busted play, but he realized exactly what was going on. He said, no, I'm running with the football. And really good play by Burrow in that case. But Hamilton, also great play by him to be right at the spot and very well schemed by Orr.
Right, exactly. That was a nice little chess match between Orr and Burrow right there, because the bait was set and Burrow was smart enough to not throw that ball and just tuck it away. And he got, I think, 1 yard or something like that. But yeah. Yeah, that's the type of effect that Hamilton can have in a game and plays like that. Like, it doesn't look great. I mean, obviously he didn't make the tackle, so he gets no stats, you know, for that play, but he made that play.
Oh, he made that play. All right. Yeah. it's some great things. Obviously Blitzy had the sack. That was a really nice one that forced a punt. It was one of the bigger plays in this game. He stripped the ball of Moss, actually kind of dislodged it from behind. It's not the kind of PD you're likely to get an interception on, but it is a nice, anytime you separate a receiver from a football, that's nice. I thought his 2-point try, you know, when you saw the replay, you saw the bear hug that occurred in the end zone of Jasicki. So he obviously wasn't in a really good position to cover him. Then he catches the ball, you know, but then, you know, and that's after we've seen him catch the ball and return it all the way down the field. And then obviously he's got pianos to deliver because he's all of a sudden got 8,000 pounds on his back. And Jasicki also is equally tired, but maybe just a hair less. And to see those guys run up the sideline again, they have nothing left. They're about to have to redo the 2-point try, and Hamilton's already waving somebody else on the field.
Just come in. Yes, exactly. Like, boy, and he scared me for a second because he just slowed down. It's like, oh no, he didn't. Tommy didn't pull a hamstring, you know, on this play, on this busted play that's going to get called back anyway. Yeah, that was comic relief, you know, for it there though.
Yeah. It's a shame. I mean, that would have been a 2-point play. It would have been a big deal. And if we look back at this game, that safety the Ravens allowed was an enormous play in the game, because the Bengals almost certainly would have gone for one otherwise, and it would have been, instead of a 3-point lead for much of the time that the Ravens are cutting the lead down, it would have been to tie the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the special teams gaffes that they've kind of frustrated me. Their puncher made to have it land at the 1 yard line. Like,
where the hell is the fair catch?
Where was Wallace? He didn't even chase after the ball. Like, that was like down the sideline, and he's, you know, in the middle of the field, not even, you know, attempting to stop that ball, and it landed at the 20, like at the 20, and rolled to the 1. It wasn't, you know, anything. I don't understand that. And the same thing with Collier on that kickoff that he flubs and flubs out of bounds too. Like, things like that worry me,
they moved the ball down the field after the Collier flub, at least
they did,
but they got safetied after the Tylan Wallace mistake. So that's a big one. I didn't listen to Harbaugh's interviews yet today, 'cause we're recording this at 4:30. So I didn't really have a chance yet in preparing for this show, but I bet that was addressed on the questions that they had.
Sure. I would hope so. Yeah. And I hope at least, you know, Harbaugh and special teams coordinators gave him a talking to about that too.
Yeah. All right. Whose turn? You pick Kyle Hamilton, right?
Yep.
So how about we talk about, well, one guy who kind of disappeared in this game, I thought was a little frustrating, was Odafe Oweh. Didn't have a real good game against Orlando Brown. Brown is a guy I would think you'd be able to have some success with Owe's quickness, but such was really not the case in this game. He didn't. I don't think he had a single pressure as I scored it. Let me just check my charting here again. No, he did not have a single pressure event or contribution. And that means no getting in the cone or anything like that. He wasn't terrible at playing the run or anything. I thought this was a pretty piss poor game, frankly, in terms of his contributions to the rush. And if you're frustrated about the pass rush, it probably is not warranted at this point in the season. They've been, you know, very good at collecting sacks. They've been reasonably good at getting pressure, though not as good as in 23. And Oweh himself has been a much improved player. This was just a kind of a regressive step to me.
Yeah. I didn't see much pass rush, at many pressures from either of the outside. So Van Noy kind of had a quiet game as well. So, Brown and Mims are two enormous tackles. So I think they played relatively well, although I think Oweh at least got a couple of false start penalties on Brown. So there's a little bit of contribution there. But it was a pretty quiet night for both of them, a quiet day for both of them. Yeah. So talk about Nate Wiggins a little bit. I think in all of the struggles that the D-backs had, I think he might have had the best game out of all of them in totality. He wasn't targeted as much as Stevens and Marlin were, and he had a couple of pass defenses, gave up a couple of catches, but pretty much everybody did. So, but I thought he had a pretty solid game against two very good wide receivers and a quarterback that was, you know, white hot. So I thought it was a pretty good game from him.
Didn't play a whole lot of snaps. Did give up the long pass to who caught it? Who caught the one on the right sideline? Took him down 80. To the 30.
Yeah.
Yosova?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he did give up that play. There wasn't a whole lot extra. Not that there needs to be a whole lot extra, didn't give up a lot of yak in this game. I didn't allow broken tackles that went for a lot of yak. And the Bengals, they had some yak in this game. But Wiggins will be back. He's made I think he had two passes defensed in this game, which was nice.
Yeah.
So that was something that and he had a big pass defense too, because it came after the Matabike sack there at 2nd and 17, and he stripped somebody.
He got one on Chase. He got one on Chase on a third down play to force a fourth. Yeah.
I thought that was on second to force third, but either way, it was. Let me go back to it because Yeah, it was on the second down. So it was second and 17, and this made it be third and 17. Then they ran the football. So they kind of gave up, which was
that was the fourth grade. There was one in the first half where he got a stop in the it was on a third down and then it forced a fourth down. That was on Chase. But yes, yeah, you're talking after the Matabike sack in the fourth quarter. Yeah, that was his other one.
You're absolutely right. It's third and five, and he did. So that's two pretty big plays. If you really want to talk game context, I think you can make a case Wiggins had a pretty decent game. Of course, you never want to give up the big play like he did. And of course, are you at any point concerned about Wiggins' growth into being a really fine NFL corner based on where he is right now? Is the inconsistency bothered you at all?
I think a rookie corner is going to be inconsistent. You see the cover skills, you see the speed out there. I wish he had better hands. He could have had two interceptions against Buffalo. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be some inconsistency there. But I mean, plus he's so young. Is he even 21 yet, or did he just turn 21? So, he's very young also. So, I mean, you see the physical skills, I think he is definitely on track next year, be a starting cornerback and an above average starting cornerback next year. Mm-hmm. And from there he definitely has Pro Bowl potential, but I think he's a solid three cornerback now, and you know he's tracking to be a starter next year.
Yeah, I'm in the same place. I've seen enough in terms of positive flashes from the PDs. He gets his hands on the football so often. He could do it from behind, mm-hmm. seemingly effortlessly. Uses his length quite well, I think. Seems to really feather the in terms of his touch on opposing wide receivers, which is good for multiple reasons. Number one is you don't get called for flags because there's no obvious twisting going on, and the officials really do look for that. And the other thing is he uses his hand well to track a receiver, really trusts his makeup speed. So a big part of his game is trying to avoid penalties, which seems silly after penalty for the cycle against Las Vegas. But he really does. I think he's going to be good at avoiding penalties in his career and be a guy who will be in your hip pocket a lot of the time and able to touch the receiver without drawing flags on a consistent basis. I've really liked what I've seen so far.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I hope he's being coached that he's probably one of the last people that needs to get grabby, because he's got such good foot speed. He's got such good quickness and just downhill speed. He doesn't need to get grabby. He just trust your athleticism, trust your technique, and just be right there. Yeah.
All right, I want to address a mailbag question with my next guy, and that's Brandon Stevens. And let me make sure I've got the question here, and it's in. But basically, it's a question about I want to make sure I have the correct person that I'm crediting this to. Talked about Brandon Stevens having the best coverage in terms of being tight, but that he also, I'm sorry, it's Kid Rock 20, is it? No, it's not Kid Rock 20. I'm sorry, I am losing the play. I really want to get this right, given people's contribution to the mailbag and whatnot. I want to encourage, but I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it anyway. The question was, why does Brandon Stevens always seem to have the best coverage and yet still give up lots of big plays? And I think the answer is actually pretty simple. And it showed up against the Bengals, and it showed up against Keon Coleman of the Bills as well, is that he's a guy who doesn't really find the football in the air. He really tries to play the hands of the opposing player and the receiver. And so that works well if the ball is coming over the receiver's shoulder as opposed to coming back to the quarterback on a back shoulder play. We saw that with Coleman a couple times. Coleman had probably opportunities for four grabs or pretty close to it on that left sideline. He made two of them. And Stevens is more effective in this game as well, with a PD he had early in the game, getting it away from, I forget if it was Chase or Higgins on the play. Do you remember?
I think it was, I think that was Higgins. Yeah.
Okay. So it was Higgins up the left sideline. But where he's had a lot of trouble is when the receiver turns around and knows when to turn around for that back shoulder throw. And unlike Jackson's not a back shoulder thrower. Burrow is a extremely good back shoulder thrower. And the receivers come back for the football is a big way to gain an advantage. Joe Flacco was that in Baltimore. It's just not Lamar's prime characteristic. I'm sure given enough time in the league, he could probably learn to do it. I'm not sure that he would like to anyway, because on schedule throws and more of those are like playing a lot of your hands before the flop at Texas Hold'em. You know, Lamar likes to play extended, likes to play post-flop poker with those defensive backs. And it's just, it's not what he's really comfortable doing. And I do think it's had an impact on Bateman. But getting back to Stevens, in terms of this game, I, you know, that was, this was another case of there were some back shoulder throws, which beat him. I think it's just something you live with someone, the style of Stevens. You hope he can improve at it, but honestly, this is probably Stevens' last year as a Raven. I don't see, with all of the contracts they now are popping up as priorities, likely, and Travis Jones, get them early, Linderbaum, get them, you know, it won't even be early. It'll be on time for Linderbaum. Maybe get Hamilton a year early. Those aren't even the only ones, but they're some of the major ones. I don't see a way they keep Stevens.
Right, exactly. I thought at the beginning of the season it would probably be it would either be him or Humphrey, and you know, the way Humphrey's playing so far this year, I think Humphrey has played his way onto the 2025 teams, and not that Brandon hasn't played well, but I think you can manage your cap that you can keep Humphrey, maybe extend him, you know, for another couple of years and spread that number out rather than to extend Stevens onto the next year. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me probe a little deeper on the Humphrey situation, because I think this might be the ideal time to extend Humphrey, but I think I kind of wonder if there's a question, if there's a conversation that needs to occur beforehand. Now, Humphrey's his actual play has kind of changed a lot over the years. And this year in particular, he's become a much better ball hawk. He's seeing the field better. He seems to like to play, you know, on the back end of cover three more and come down on the football, try and make a play on it that way. Not saying he's exactly Marcus Williams from that cover three position, but he's got good ball skills. Do you have the conversation with him right now if you want to extend him for, say, 3 years beyond 25? So you're going to sign him for 26, 27, and 28 as well. Mm-hmm. First of all, he's probably in the Ravens Ring of Honor as soon as that happens. Assuming he plays three of those 4 years, which is probably the most likely number two, by the way, then he's probably in the Ravens Ring of Honor. But second of all, do you talk to him already about moving to safety and say, hey, look, it may not happen in 25, but we're going to want you to move to safety at some point. You know, we have a need to fill this position, have a back end guy who can play the way you look in cover three, but you're also our most physical corner. You can do that. We'll still find ways to, you know, get you up the line of scrimmage and rush the passer occasionally, but we really want you on the back end. Do you think that's a conversation that Humphrey would take well?
I think to extend his career and for him to play in the NFL and also specifically play for the Ravens for his entire career, which is something that he's stated, you know, multiple times that he wants to stay here his entire career, that he needs to have talk about, okay, what does year 30 look like? What does year 32 look like for you? If you're going to, in your talks about that extension, it's like, okay, I think you're going to be, you're still going to be a very good corner for the next 3 years, but starting year four, you're going to have to, you know, the natural decline that you're going to have, we think you would be an excellent free safety, and look at the career of Rod Woodson after he moved from corner. Yep. You know, he had a Hall of Fame corner career, and then he had a Hall of Fame free safety career, you know, in his 30s, because that's the type of player that we could see you having.
I asked him this question in camp, and he said that the conversations had not yet happened, but he did always see himself ending at safety. The problem I have is that even though he's just had, and he is having a great year potentially at corner right now. I mean, this game was not as good for him, but but of course he had the interception, but he was giving up only 3.9 yards per target coming into this game. So I think, you know, if they had the discussion with him later this year or next year and said, hey, we want you to move to safety, I think he'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, I've got good years at corner left. And I kind of wonder at what point is it going to be okay? And what I don't want to happen, I want them to make this move too early rather than too late. So they'll have some point where it's kind of like now where they've got multiple young corners. They're trying to see who they've got and sort through. That's the time to go ahead and move Humphrey to safety when you've got kind of a surplus of talent. And they kind of have that right now with Wiggins and Tampa. Tampa may be a year away. He's been hurt the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But still, at some point, they're going to have to figure out what he has in terms of being on the field. They still need to figure out if there's any salvageable component to JAD's career in Baltimore. And you know, they've rarely had this many outside cornerbacks at the same time who could do some of the things Humphrey does, and let alone the slot guys they have.
Right. Yeah, I keep thinking back to Rod Woodson, and you know, you were talking about a year too early rather than a year too late. Rod's last year as a corner, he was frankly just bad. He had lost enough foot speed that he was getting beat deep. And I think Humphrey would need to kind of have that self-awareness, like, okay, I'm no longer going to be an elite or even maybe possibly a good cornerback in this league. Now is the time for me to make that transition and move permanently to safety, because I still have the athleticism, the instincts, the range to play safety rather than an individual corner.
Yeah. All right. Looking forward to that. I hope that's will happen. So I think I brought up Stevens and we transitioned into Humphrey. Who's your next guy?
Yep. Sure. Roquan Smith. I think this team is playing overall excellent run defense all year. And in particular, this game, this was a very fine game against the run. And Roquan is just at the, you know, he's at the center of that. Him, Matabike, and Jones are shutting down the run as well as anybody in the league. And, you know, they've just been, you know, Roquan was all over the field when they were running the ball. He knew he was inside their run playbook almost. He was, just flying in, making tackles. I think their first drive, they had a 3rd-and-1, and he just stopped them cold. Brown had a full head of steam, and Roquan just stopped him dead in his tracks. So, people are going to criticize, you know, the pass defense, and you know, I think he has had his struggles in space a little bit, but I mean, what he is bringing to the run game has been tremendous so far.
All right. Appreciate it. We also had a question about Smith that came up. I'll get the rest of this here if I can. Now I don't want to do this for another few minutes. Lots of questions about poor safety play. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just going to, I really appreciate all the questions. There was a question about Roquan Smith and, you know, the kind of game he had. I was actually questioning whether or not this was a good game for Roquan. I think it clearly was. He had, a number of defensive wins among his 15 tackles. He wasn't just tackling people 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, which you'll often see. I thought this game, more than any that I've seen so far this year from Roquan, he was a scavenger. He really picked up on the loose change left by other players. So some of that is stuff where he's just taking advantage of another player making the play. And that on that initial 3rd-and-1, Matabike drove his guy 3 yards into the backfield, which really limited the space Brown had, or Moss had on that play. I think it was Moss. And he took him down right in the hole. And great play. And no issue with how it was done. You always get a nice form tackle with Roquan. Made 15 in this game, didn't miss any. That's really unusual. Wow. Linebackers, they just will occasionally miss tackles, but that's a terrific game. And we mentioned, you know, that Trenton Simpson had, I think it's 19 consecutive made tackles. Well, Simpson, you know, Smith has 15 in one game with no misses. That's pretty special. And the other thing I'll say about his coverage is this, that when CJ Mosley was here at the end of his career, he had a reputation as being not particularly good in coverage. And I'm talking about the last maybe 3 years with the Ravens before he went to the Jets. And people always used to throw this out there. Well, the truth of the matter was the Ravens had a bunch of coverage assets all around him. They had Eric Weddle at free safety. They had a variety, actually, of guys playing strong safety or of moderate talent. And they always pretty much had good outside corners, including Marlon Humphrey and others. And so if you're an opposing quarterback or an opposing defensive coordinator, you looked at the Ravens and you said, I've got to try and take advantage of the inside linebackers. And actually, Zach Orr playing with him was probably a slightly better coverage player, which made Mosley the target. And it didn't mean Mosley was a bad coverage player. Mosley actually had very good instincts on what was going on behind him, which caused me to expect that sooner out of Ravens linebackers who came along later, like Patrick Queen, who really never developed great instincts in that way. But I thought Mosley was actually a very good coverage player. We really saw it on his final regular season play as a Raven when he went up to get the fourth and 10 pass to give the Ravens the AFC North title.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, another thing is part of it. There are going to be very few tight ends or even running backs that are really going to beat you and beat your defense consistently inside. So even if you have an average, and I don't think Roquan is even an average pass defender in space. I think he's at least above average, but having an average coverage middle linebacker is not going to kill your defense. It's generally going to be the guys on the outside that is going to do it. It's not going to be a tight end. So yeah, it can be frustrating every now and then you see a tight end get a 20-yard pass on a streak or, you know, a deep out or something like, or an in pattern or a dig route or something like that. But those plays are not going to be the plays that beat you.
Yeah, I agree with you. The exception to that is when you face maybe a Mahomes and he finds one thing about your defense and he just picks on it to death. And you have trouble figuring out how you can counter that. That really happened in week one with all those pick and rub routes. It wasn't just, I mean, it was all three of the inside linebackers got beat some in that game. Malik Harrison certainly probably took the worst of it, but Roquan Smith had a tough day. And even Trenton Simpson, who I think had two PDs in the game. No, he had one. The second one didn't end up being a PD because Mahomes caught it. But it was, everybody had trouble, you know, in that game and will in certain circumstances against elite quarterbacks with elite accuracy who know exactly how to take advantage of that guy that they see on the field. And it's just a shame that that's the first game of the season. That's the memory that probably a lot of people are going to take away about Roquan Smith, who's, you know, a fine defender.
Right.
All right. I want to kind of get to the end of this here. Let me pick a player that we ought to talk about here. I think we don't often talk about Tavius Robinson, who's, you know, gets limited use, but he had a really fine game. And that, first of all, that sack was one of the very biggest plays of the entire game. It took a third and one, made it to a fourth and eight. If you take a third and one and deflect a pass, that's still a down you can go for it and probably should. But if you take a third and one and make it into a fourth and eight, that's a hell of a job. And he actually got by two offensive players to do that. Remarkable.
He chipped one of the tight ends that was going out in the pattern. And I don't know if he got after he chipped, he kind of got in the pass lane because Burrow was looking left before the sack, and he kind of got in the pass lane and then ended up getting the sack. And I mean, you know, you redirect a tight end, get in the pass lane and finish a sack. That's a really nice play right there.
It's a cycle. Yeah. And all it really takes is one play like that of such immense value, you know, that kind of a high leverage play that's enough. But Robinson actually did fine things and avoided some of the mistakes, you know, in this game. I thought he was one of the good run defenders for the Ravens. He played the edge well. And I just think there's a lot of positive to say. I'm still hopeful that he can give the Ravens a little more as a pass rusher. This was a good example of it, even though it's not an easily replicatable specific thing. Honestly, you know, to give this the most possible credit, it more looked like something Terrell Suggs would do in terms of doing multiple things on the same play, which I don't think for Robinson is something he's going to be able to, you know, replicate at this point in his career. But I'm still hopeful that he can deliver as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you could get a solid 10 to 15 snaps out of him, I mean, probably mostly on rundowns, but getting, you know, an occasional hurry or a quarterback hit, you know, on one of the maybe 10 rush opportunities you have, I think you're doing fine. You're doing fine.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else you want to talk about?
I just want to give Marlon, you know, one last kudos on just that immense interception that was just such a huge turning point in this game. I mean, the Bengals are at least in field goal position to go up 6 at the time. Burrow was just absolutely on fire. He just absolutely roasted us in the second half of that game. And that game, you know, that play just to keep points off the board for us to only be down 3 in our last possession, which allowed us to at least tie the game. And plus, I really do think that play made Zach Taylor gun shy from that point on, because he was very conservative. He's very, like we talked about in the first episode, he was very conservative in overtime, just running the ball 3 times when Burrow was red hot. Mm-hmm. You're playing for a 55-yard field goal, more or less. And at the end of the game, just I think he, you know, that play just changed the game and probably changed the fortunes of the Bengals and possibly made a very slim chance for them to make it to the playoffs at all now.
Well, I hope you're right. Anyway, yeah. I do want to get to one more question here. Imaginary internet guy, great name, by Diet Woke Lime. Sounds like somebody assigned that randomly to him. Says, between our Darius Washington, TJ Tampa, and a one-day healthy JAD, is there a reasonable path to limiting Marcus Williams and Eddie Jackson's time on the field? If for Williams, what can be done to hide him better from offenses? Compound question, great question. I don't know that we have the 30 minutes to kind of go into that in full. But, you know, we talked in the first episode about the problem of safety being one of the really big problems on the defense, probably the second biggest problem the team has, maybe after the offensive line. Fair?
Fair. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So, in terms of how you hide those guys, I think, first of all, Marcus Williams is the only true safety the Ravens have. So if you want to hide him, you got to go out and get somebody who's a true free safety at this point. I don't think Eddie Jackson can play that role because I don't think Eddie Jackson's succeeding in the split field role. How would you solve the split field role with the personnel the Ravens have if they don't go outside the organization?
So short of not bringing somebody in from outside, I think Ardarius Washington is probably the top guy to kind of probably replace Jackson in that role. Tampa, they want and need to see him at corner and see how he does at corner. I mean, not only for this year but also for the future, they need to know the kind of depth that they're going to have in 25 and beyond. You know, probably like we talked about when Stevens has probably gone through free agency. So they need to have at least want to know that he's at least a starter quality at corner. I mean, JD probably at this point, it's probably not a safety or somebody that could play a split field. So I think Washington is really that guy to fill that role. And he's played it some, he's kind of been moved all around. He's also played slot corner. But he, he's just a guy that just kind of excels at wherever he plays. He's a really very good role player for us. You know, he makes plays when he's out there.
By the way, Ardarius Washington is another guy that the Ravens could sign early to an extension. And I think it would be a really smart move if they did so. I don't think it should be a lot of money. I think it should be a survivor type contract that he gets. But I think if you could get him for 3 years and $7.5 million or something, and you really appreciate the flexibility he gives you defense, might not be that much. Might be 3 years, $6 million for Ardarius. He gets three more years in the NFL. He's an RFA next year, so the Ravens have to tender him in some way. That tender is non-guaranteed, so they can tender him and then reduce the amount, which they've done a lot of times before with linemen. But I think there's a real possibility of that, and I think he could fit in the safety plans. And even if he doesn't, they've got some challenges when Mollett gets back about exactly where everybody's going to play. I don't think Mollett is on any kind of special program that he automatically moves back into to play slot corner immediately, even though he was okay last year. He was fine. I think Ardarius is probably better. And so I think he should keep the role. If you're just talking about that, would you agree with that, or would you go a different direction in terms of Mollett?
I mean, as far as Mollett, I really wonder what you're going to do, because I think it's probably going to be either him or Wiggins that gets kind of playing time. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if Mollett comes in slot corner, you're not benching Humphrey, you're not benching Stevens, so Wiggins is kind of going to be the guy that would lose snaps. I don't necessarily want to see Wiggins lose snaps, but I think they're going to try to get Wiggins as many reps in there and almost probably let him fail. He's got a much longer leash to fail than Mollett would, and I think they're going to try to do that try to get as much knowledge on Wiggins as they can.
Well, sadly, of course, Humphrey left the facility in a boot yesterday. That was reported by Jeff Zrebeck. I'm not taking credit for that. But he didn't play the last two series of the game when the Ravens really, really needed him. Right after the interception was his last play, by the way. He high stepped away from that like there was nothing wrong with his foot in any way, shape, or form. So yeah. I don't know where he hurt himself. I really can't figure it out. I certainly hope it's nothing serious, but oftentimes when you take off a superstar player like that, the likelihood is there is some problem that may linger.
Right. So, yeah.
Which is going to make hopefully it easier. My point is to get Mollett into the lineup and get Wiggins in the lineup also.
Yeah. Well, if Humphrey is going to be out for any period of time, I think Mollett definitely gets some more reps that way.
All right. I want to thank everybody again for all of the absolutely fantastic mailbag questions today. You had great stuff. Some we didn't get to, too. I apologize for that. Some are going to be on the offensive show tomorrow, but we'll get back to them then. Brandon, always great talking football with you. 2 hours flies by doing this with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, I really enjoy doing these. It's always a lot of fun talking with you and talking Ravens, so I really love it. But you can read Twitter. My handle is bcroxton99. Love talking Ravens. Love talking NFL. If you got I love jokes. Love to laugh. So
I love jokes as well.
My way. Yeah.
I didn't know that about you. other folks out there, if you're looking to do something nice for the show, the thing we ask is always popularize it by either like and subscribe if you're looking on YouTube, by telling somebody about it, or possibly by writing us a short review, 50 words or less, out on your favorite podcast platform. Always appreciate it. We'll drive some traffic to the show, hopefully. Help us keep creating content. I am under pressure sometimes from Maureen to see that there's good listens on the show. She likes to see what's happening with her contributions to it, and always is very gratified about all the loyalty of you folks. Thanks very much. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. It was great.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.